ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ गुड Welcome back. Welcome also to the many students attending these classes regularly online. We continue our study. Let me turn the volume up just a little bit. We're continuing where we left off in our last class in the Uddhava Gita. Sri Krishna was telling Uddhava, meaning also telling all of us, about the value of human life. And it's necessary because we take things for granted. We do that all the time in every aspect of our lives. Here, the emphasis of Sri Krishna was on this point. Enlightenment, which is the highest possible goal of life, is only possible as a human being. Any other animal is not capable of gaining enlightenment. We are animals, so this human animal is the only one capable of enlightenment. And Sri Krishna surprisingly said that even all the gods in the heavens, they're jealous of you because if you are born into heaven, you can't get enlightened in that heavenly domain. You have to be reborn as a human being in order to get enlightened. So Sri Krishna said, even the gods in heaven are jealous of you. You won the jackpot out of 84 lakh yoni, 8.4 million possibilities. You got the birth as a human being. So this is to be treasured. And then the conversation got a little bit more serious, and this is where we pick up the thread. And it's because our human lifespan is short. And, you know, I think almost everyone here is at an age where we start to appreciate the shortness, the brevity of life. And therefore, the importance, and then the last verse we saw, was the importance of gaining enlightenment before this brief life comes to an end. If you don't get enlightenment in this life, there's no guarantee that you will pick it up in the next life. In chapter 6 of the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna points to the possibility. If you are a great yogi, you may indeed pick up the thread in your next life. That's what Sri Krishna teaches. Are you exactly a great yogi? If you're not a great yogi, there's no guarantee at all. You could be born as, by the way, anything is possible. You may enjoy your next life in a wonderful heavenly loka, or you might enjoy your next life as a cockroach. I mean, cockroaches, I suppose they enjoy their lives somehow. I don't know. cockroach joy, something they enjoy. Anyway, so this life is short. Enlightenment is only possible before death. And therefore, Sri Krishna used an interesting word in a prior verse. He says, apramattaha. Let me see where that one is. In the third line. Apramattaha idam jnatva. Jnatva, having understood the brevity of this life, he says, apramattaha, you should be vigilant. You shouldn't, well, the American expression, you shouldn't drop the ball. You shouldn't lose sight of the goal. The time you have to reach that goal is brief. Therefore, apramatta. Astaha, you should be vigilant. And that's what Sri Krishna is going to show now with a delightful metaphor. We'll see that. Chidyamanam yamayare taihi. Chidyamanam yamayare taihi. Kritanidam vanaspatam. Kritanidam vanaspatam. Kagha swaketam utsrijya. Kaga swaketam utsrijya. Kshemam yati hyalam pataha. Kshemam yati hyalam pataha. In the third line, we're talking about a kaga, a bird. A bird who, in the second line, is kritanidam, who has built a nest, vanaspatim, in a tree. A bird who has built a nest in a tree. Now, up to the third line, the tree which is being chidyamanam, cut down. The big problem, you know, especially in developing countries, not just India, but all developing countries in the rural areas, a lot of trees are cut for the sake of firewood. And there's a problem with deforestation because of that problem. People are poor, they need firewood to cook on, and sometimes these trees are cut. Also, of course, trees are cut for wood. You know, throughout the world, wherever there are trees, there are tree cutters. Is that not true? Because wherever trees grow, wood is a very common building material, as it is in this country, in North India, and in many, many other places. So this tree in which the bird has a nest is chidyamanam, being cut down by whom? Etaihi yamaihi. Yama for the bird. Yama is the god of death. So yama for this bird is the tree cutter. Actually, not for the bird, for the tree. Yama for the tree is a tree cutter. So the expression used here is etaihi yamaihi. These woodcutters are called yama. They bring death to the tree because their concern is to get the wood. They're not going to ask the tree, are you okay if we cut you down? So they just cut. In the same way, when figuratively speaking, yama comes to take your life, is he going to ask you, are you ready? No. No choice. That's the idea. That's why these tree cutters are called yama, for the tree. So what does the bird do? This is a very wise bird. In the third line, swaketam utsrijya. Utsrijya, the bird leaves swaketam, his own abode, his nest. The bird leaves his nest behind and kshemam yati, and finds safety. Flies off to safety. He alampataha. He, because that bird is alampata, free from attachment. Free from attachment. The bird, suppose the bird is attached to his nest. So that bird refuses to leave the nest. The tree cutters cut down the tree. The tree falls and the bird gets crushed when the tree falls. So the bird is sufficiently detached to leave its nest before death, right? While the bird is alive, before death, the bird is ready to leave its nest. We'll see the metaphor, this is called the drishtanta, the metaphor. In the next verse, we'll see the darshtanta, that which the metaphor represents. And just the sneak preview here is the nest represents your body, body and mind. There's a lot of attachment here, right? This is me. Well, obviously that attachment will go away at death, but then it's too late, as we discussed in the prior class. So the bird is ready to give up its... The bird is not attached to its nest and can leave it before death. And the metaphor is this. Are you ready to give up attachment to your body and mind now? Because Yama is coming. The woodcutter is coming. We don't know when. Yama is coming. We don't know when. So before Yama knocks at your door, metaphorically speaking, if you are to reach the highest goal of enlightenment in this life, you will necessarily have had to give up attachment to this body and mind early enough in life so that you can reach enlightenment. And this is a point brought out in the next verse. Let's see that.
Ahoratraischidyamanam. Ahoratraischidyamanam. Budhvayurbhayavepatuhu. Budhvayurbhayavepatuhu. Muktasanga param budhva. Muktasanga param buddhva nirhiha upashamyati, nirhiha upashamyati.
In the second line, buddhva ayuhu, separating out the first two words. Buddhva, having understood ayuhu, that your life, the length of your life, now up at the end of the first line, your life is chidyamanam. It is being cut. Okay. Interesting. There's a problem with the metaphor, and that is the tree gets cut all at once. Your life is getting cut ahoratre, day by day. Each day, a little bit of your life is cut away. Cut, cut, cut. There's an expression, you die by a thousand cuts. I don't know where that expression comes from, but applicable here. We die not by a thousand, but many thousands of cuts, every cut representing one day of our life. So our days are slipping away day by day. Our life is slipping away one day at a time. Buddha, understanding, ayuhu. Your life to being cut away like that, definitely. Buddha, if you get it, you will be bhayavepatuhu, trembling with fear. This is apramattaha. This is kind of a big deal, and that is actually that many people, for a variety of reasons, fear death, though we've all encountered death of loved ones, and it's a very painful, agonizing thing to go through. And perhaps for that reason and other reasons, we may also fear our own deaths. Perhaps that's normal, but it's problematic, because if we are unable to reflect on our own mortality, if we're unable to reflect on the brevity of our lives, we devalue our lives, don't we? This is what we spoke before of taking it for granted. And, you know, how do we spend our lives? Just going back to the word apramattaha, to live with vigilance. To live with vigilance in this case is to live fully appreciating the value of life. And the value of life means the value of each and every day. It's not that, so often we are accustomed to seeing life as a series of goals to be accomplished. So your first goal is you get educated. Next goal, you get married, you get settled. Next goal, you build up your profession and raise a family, whatever. So we look at life as a series of goals to be accomplished, in which case our attention is always on the next goal. That sounds pretty normal, but it's a kind of conventional thinking that's the antithesis of what Sri Krishna is teaching here. He's teaching that we should be apramattaha, constantly vigilant. And vigilant means recognizing the value, not just of reaching those goals, recognizing the value of each and every day. Because if we don't consider each day as valuable, they just slip away. This is where we take things for granted. This is a little side issue, but a great practice. I'm not sure, can be a little bit uncomfortable, may not be uncomfortable, but a practice that's certainly been a major part of my life is at the end of each day, honestly, I do this for decades, I've done this. At the end of each day, I ask myself, what did I accomplish today? Keeps you honest. If you spend the day goofing off, as people say, then at the end of the day, what do you tell yourself? I really goofed off a lot today. And that's not a very pleasant kind of reflection. So, honestly, this, as I said, this practice might not be for everyone. I have done it for decades. It is transformative. It is powerful. What have I accomplished today? It puts that value back where it belongs. And where it belongs is not on those particular goals. Where the value is each and every day, Sri Krishna says, Aho ratraihi chidyamanam, that life which is being chopped away one day and one night at a time. That's where our attention should be. That's what Sri Krishna calls being apramattaha, being vigilant. So, this leads to a surprising conclusion, and that is reflecting on your death is not grim, it's essential for your sadhana. Don't make it grim. You know, we're all mature people. We know that we're going to die. We don't know when. So I don't think that's a particular... Some people have a problem with it, but most people at some point, we reconcile ourselves to the fact that, you know, just as if I joked with you last week, just when you go to the market, every product you buy has a use before date. It expires. And we're used to that thinking, that everything has an expiration date, including our bodies and minds. So we're more or less comfortable with that. If you are sufficiently comfortable with that, then contemplating on your death is helpful. Not grim, not fearful, it's helpful because it'll create a sense of urgency, a sense of commitment. When Shankaracharya and other great teachers talk about being a mumukshu, being one desirous of moksha, gaining liberation, they describe the mumukshu, the one seeking liberation, as being so intent on gaining moksha that they are like a person whose hair has caught on fire is running towards a pond. That's the kind of intensity that's referred to in various texts, and that's the kind of intensity that is ultimately helpful in gaining moksha in this life. If you don't pay attention to the length of your life, who will feel like their hair is on fire? In fact, it's the opposite. Most people have this thought, especially people born in India. This is a very common concept. Yeah, I'll do that at the end of my life. Have you studied the Bhagavad Gita? By the way, this doesn't apply to any of you, but it applies to many others. Have you studied the Bhagavad Gita? No, I'll do that when I'm old. Right? Have you learned how to meditate? No, I'll do that when I'm retired, etc., etc. This obviously is unhelpful. The time, by the way, when you're old, you know, nowadays we're increasingly aware of the problem of Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia. So when you're old, we joked, it's not a joking matter, but in a prior class we said that your body may have one expiration date, your mind might have an earlier expiration date. Possible. So to postpone spiritual practice, spiritual seeking, it's foolish. It's foolish to postpone. So, just like it's foolish to postpone setting aside money for retirement. Every financial advisor will tell you it's foolish to postpone. I'm not a financial advisor. I don't care what if you set money aside or not. That's up to you. But as a spiritual teacher, I can tell you, it is foolish to postpone. But as I said, this message really doesn't apply to you. You're sitting in this class today. This message applies for all those who missed class today. Take that as you want. Okay. Let's pick up the thread here. So, buddhva, with this understanding, you become vepatuhu, not exact, bhaya means fear. And as I said, the fear is not helpful. You know, to be afraid of dying just is more misery. You're just adding misery onto misery. So fear is not helpful, and definitely we can find enough teachings here to overcome fear of death. That's not our problem right now. That's not our topic right now, fear of death. We can deal with that elsewhere. It is dealt with elsewhere. Our focus now is not on fear of death, but on acknowledging the brevity of life and therefore the importance of undertaking spiritual practice now, before it's too late. And with that understanding, the person hopefully doesn't experience fear, but does become, in the third line, mukta sangaha, free from attachment. Here's the problem. As long as you're driven by raga dvesha, as long as you're driven by the many needs of the body and mind, you're so busy, again, not you in particular, but again, those who missed class today are so busy going to the mall, going to parties. Now it's Deepavali time. Everyone's going to social events. Good, which is nice. But if you become so busy with all these social things, with going to parties, with going to the mall, with doing this, that, and the other thing, if that consumes all of your time, what time is left over? And so many people already don't get enough sleep. It's easy to understand why people don't attend class. They're too busy. Too busy for spiritual practice. This is what we called foolish just a few moments ago. Foolish to be too busy with all of this. So therefore, the sangaha, this recognition of the importance of human life, of the brevity of human life, and of the importance of gaining liberation, moksha, before the end of this life, this makes the person mukta sangaha, free from worldly attachment, and therefore that person can dedicate himself or herself to spiritual growth, and as a result, param buddhwa, having understood, having discovered, having reached param, the ultimate truth, ultimate reality, the reality which is already within, the reality which is your true nature, the person becomes nirihaha, completely free from desires, or to put it in the positive sense, completely content. The opposite of desire is contentment. This person becomes completely content and upashamyati, reaches a state of perfect contentment. This is moksha. Notice then, the path to moksha begins with the recognition of the brevity of this life, the importance of life, and the importance of spiritual growth. This is a really, really important message. All right, then. This topic of the value of human life continues now for a few more verses. Yes, and here we have a longer meter, so follow me, please.
Nradeha madhyam sulabham sudurlabham. Nradeha madhyam sulabham sudurlabham. Plavam sukalpam guru karna dharam. Plavam sukalpam guru karna dharam. Mayanukulena namasvateritam. Mayanukulena namasvateritam. Puman bhavabdim nataret sahatmaha. Puman bhavabdim nataret sahatmaha.
Tough words. We'll see that at the end.
Nridehaṁ. Adyam,
adyam. First of all, nrideham, having gained a human body, nr is nara, person. So adyam, first of all, you have nrideham. We spoke about that as being the jackpot. Here Sri Krishna says it is sudurlabham. Durlabham is difficult to get. Sudurlabham, really, really difficult to get. But sulabham, you've already got it. How much effort did you expend to get this human life in this life? None. Your mother expended some effort in delivering you, perhaps. A doctor maybe expended effort. But you, sulabham, you just popped out, so to speak. You didn't do anything. You didn't have to do it. So that's his point, that human life is sudurlabham, one out of 8.4 million, but sulabham, you have it. You got lucky, so to speak, which means you are blessed by karmas from prior lives. Okay. And this body is a nice metaphor here. It's in the second line. It is like a plavam, like a boat. Sukalpam, a strong boat. If you get into, you don't want to get into a boat with leaks and falling apart and all of this. So you want a strong boat to carry you on the long journey. So we have strong bodies, strong minds. We are so... Another point, we've made this in several classes. We not only take being born as a human being for granted, but we take being born into the kind of lifestyle we have. We take it for granted. As I said in a prior class, suppose we all lived in northern Gaza. No food. No clean water, and bombs falling on your head every day. each of us would already have lost many family members. Children haven't gone to school for a year, almost a year. Okay, a year now, October 7th. So what kind of life is that? And there are so many situations all over the world where people live under horrible, horrible conditions. We are doubly blessed, not just a human being, but we all have problems in our lives, but do you have enough food and water to eat? Do you have bombs falling on your head? That's my point. And we take that part for granted, which is unfortunate. So back to our sukalpam plevam, a boat which is in good shape. And by the way, if you're on a boat in the ocean and you can't see the shore and you don't know which way to go, problem, right? Therefore, you need someone in the boat guiding you, representing the guru. Not in the boat, but somebody guiding you. Here, the boat is, you are guru karna dharam. You are in a boat which is karna dharam, which bears a karna, an ear, which hears the guru vakya, the words of the guru. Simply put, it means the boat is guided by the teachings of the guru. So you not only have human life, you don't have bombs falling on your head, you have a fit body and mind, you have the guidance of a guru, and one more feature, something, again, we take for granted. In the third line, maya anukulena nabasvata iritam. So that boat, suppose a guru is telling you, go this way, but the wind is blowing in your face. And the wind and current is so strong that even though the guru says go that way, you are unable to make the boat go in that way. You need conducive winds. And that's what Sri Krishna talks about in the third line. He says, this boat is iritam. It is prompted, it is blown, it is directed by nabhasvata, by the winds. What kind of winds? Anukulena nabhasvata, by favorable winds. Whose winds? Maya, by me, Sri Krishna says. Your boat is being blown about by my winds. I'm paraphrasing. Now, what? That's a nice metaphor. What is he saying? So, remember, we've talked about quite a bit Sri Ishvara as karma paladata, the giver of the fruits of your actions. And this results in certain karmas getting fructified in our lives. Some of those karmas obstruct us in reaching our goals. Some of those karmas help us reach the goals. So some of the karmas fructifying are anukula. They're helpful. They unfold in such a way that makes it easier for you to achieve your goal. And Sri Krishna says, maya, these winds of karma are given to you according to Ishvara's natural cosmic order. This is Ishvara as karma paladatta. So according to Ishvara's karmic winds, karmic current is a better expression, you were led. One more, we take this stuff for granted. The fact that you're sitting there and I'm sitting here is the result of how many factors in life, how many events in life culminated in your finding a value for these teachings and coming to this class on a Saturday morning. My ending up in this chair is even more unlikely, but if I look back in my life, you can trace it. Absolutely. One step after another after another. If I look back on my life, it is all Ishvara's grace in the form of fructifying karmas leading me step by step by step in this direction. And the most important step, undoubtedly, for me, was meeting my guru, Puja Swami Dayananda. So how unlikely is all of this stuff? How unlikely is it for you to be sitting there? How unlikely is it for me to be sitting here? Here we are. Sudurlabham, sulabham. Sudurlabham, unlikely, sulabham. But it's easy. It's already here. It's a done deal. It's an already existent fact. So this is the blessings. And so, here's, by the way, this is the fun part of the verse. Now Sri Krishna gets a little serious. So not, little, I'm being facetious. This is some really heavy talk here. He says, suppose there is Puman, a person who has all of these amazing blessings. You have the jackpot of a human birth. You have food and water. You don't have bombs falling on your head. You have a guru. You were led to find value in spiritual growth. You are here today. Suppose you have all of that. And Sri Krishna is talking about such a person who has such amazing blessings, but if that person, na tarat, does not manage to cross bhavabdhim, the ocean of samsara, the ocean of worldly life, if that person is pramatta, not diligent, if that person is, and I'm sorry I keep coming back to this bad joke, if a person is missing classes again and again and again and again, which means getting distracted by worldly activities, dropping the ball, losing the value for human life, the value of each day, losing the value for gaining moksha before the end of this life, if that person is falling away from spiritual life in spite of all these amazing blessings, Sri Krishna says very harshly, Saha Atmaha. That person, figuratively speaking, commits suicide, takes their own life, which is to say they are a little friendlier way of putting it would be to say they waste their lives. But to Sri Krishna, using this term atmaha, suicide, is not surprising. In the Kena Upanishad, there's a famous statement talking about gaining this knowledge, and what is this? Nachet iha avedit. Suppose iha, in this life, a person, nachet avedit, does not discover the ultimate. Then what? Look at this. In life, I'm trying to think of a good metaphor. If you miss out, what is it? Do you ever, if you have a cabinet with lots of papers and you're shuffling through all those papers, I feel like that's what's going on. I'm shuffling through all these papers looking for the right one. Where's the right one? Where's the right one? Anyway, we'll try this one. In other words, I'm looking for a metaphor. Suppose 15 years ago, a friend came to you and said, I have this investment. You should make this investment. You know, it's not for me. And suppose that investment turned out to be not much anyway. What did you lose? Nothing much. Suppose that friend came to you said, oh, you should, there's this other investment. And it could be something like Bitcoin or Nvidia or something like that. And the person says, yeah, you should do this investment. They know, not for me. And 15 years later, you are out millions of dollars, literally millions of dollars. And that's the metaphor Sri Krishna uses here. Na chediha vedit, if you don't get it in this lifetime, mahati vinashtihi, the loss is great, infinite. Mahati vinashtihi, you suffer the greatest possible loss. Failing to gain. When you have all these favorable influences, as we do, then to fail to capitalize, so to speak, on it, to fail to see it through to the end, the loss is incalculable. How's that for a fancy word? All right. Atmaha is a very strong word. Suicide. Okay, we continue. Value of... Oh, actually, now we get to the next topic. And the next topic, if you remember, Sri Krishna has been talking about jnana and bhakti, these two primary paths of sadhana. And we've talked already about how karma yoga is crucial for both. We said that's one of the unique teachings of this Bhagavata Purana, is that karma yoga is preparatory both for jnana, seeking spiritual wisdom, and it's preparatory for bhakti, developing, cultivating devotion. Now we begin a new topic where he says, by the way, there's something more that's required in addition to karma yoga. What is also required is dhyana meditation. And that's our next topic. Yeah, this one. Yes.
Yadarambheshu nirvinno, yadarambheshu nirvinno, viraktam samyatendriyaha, viraktam samyatendriyaha, abhyasenatmano yogi, abhyasenatmano yogi, dharayera chalam manaha, dharayera chalam manaha.
So introducing dhyanam, he says, suppose yada, when arambheshu nirvinnaha, suppose you become nirvinna, disillusioned, arambheshu, with all worldly accomplishments. Like the bird, by the way, before the tree cutter came, that bird was really fussy about building its nest. It wanted a 5-star nest. And that bird just abandoned the nest when he saw the woodcutters coming. In the same way, when you see Yama coming, then you become nirvinnaha, disillusioned, arambheshu, with all worldly accomplishments, because you know that the clock is ticking, so to speak, and the focus should be on spiritual growth. So therefore, this person becomes viraktaha, detached, detached towards worldly activities, the person becomes samyama indriyaha. One's senses are samyama, controlled. Controlled in the sense that you're not being... Actually, this is a little link, an important link back to karma yoga. The purpose of karma yoga... This sounds a little technical, but it's so important to know. The ultimate purpose of karma yoga is to free you from being compelled by raga dvesha. That really is the purpose of karma yoga. Karma yoga is understood in so, so many different ways. But if you ask a scholar on Vedanta, if you read the commentaries and all of that, they will all say that the ultimate purpose of karma yoga, even though it helps you in so many ways, the ultimate purpose of karma yoga is to free you from the compulsivity of raga dvesha, because as long as you're being compelled by raga dvesha, you won't be sitting here on Saturday morning, right? That's the point. Raga and dvesha are the primary obstacles to a life of spiritual growth. Get rid of the obstacles first. In spiritual life, get rid of the obstacles. That's why karma yoga is preparation for jnana and karma. And being freed from raga dvesha, you become samyama indriya. Your indriyas, by the way, your senses includes your mind. You become samyama controlled. You become freed from being dragged around by karma yoga. But then, suppose being freed from karma yoga, being freed from all these distractions, you come here and you come and sit here on a Saturday morning for these talks, and nothing goes in. That happens some, and sometimes it might be my fault. Sometimes it might not be my fault. So you have to pay attention. And sometimes, especially if you didn't sleep well last night or there's too many things on your mind and you get distracted and all of that. So Sri Krishna says that the next step after karma yoga, freeing you from raga dvesha, so you can dedicate yourself to spiritual growth, the next step in the last line, dharayet manaha, you should concentrate your mind achalam, firmly, without wavering. This is the next step of preparation. After karma yoga is preparing you for jnana and bhakti, but you also need dhyana. And that's what he says in the third line, abhyasena, through practice. And through the practice of meditation, through the practice of controlling atmanaha, of restraining, here atmanaha, just oneself, one's mind even. Through the practice of restraining your mind, you become a yogi. Yogi here means one who has learned the skill of controlling the mind, dharayet, who can focus that manaha, that mind, achalam, firmly, without wavering. Look at the picture here that Sri Krishna is painting for us, so to speak. For the sake of jnana and bhakti, the main paths forward, according to this Bhagavata Purana, the preparatory practices for jnana and bhakti are what? Karma yoga and, he's now just introduced, dhyana, meditation. So he talked about karma yoga before, now he'll talk about dhyana. I think we can just see this one more verse just to get that sense of that. Dharyamanam mano yarhi, dharyamanam mano tarhi, brahmyadashvanavastitam, brahmyadashvanavastitam,
Atandrito nurodhena, atandrito nurodhena, margen atma vasham nayet, margen atma vasham nayet.
Tarhi, when manaha, the mind, which is dharyamanam, which is meditating, when a mind which is engaged in the practice of meditation, when that mind brahmyat ashu, we have to break these words apart, ashu, suddenly brahmyat, the mind gets distracted, the mind gets, I like that word, hijacked. It feels like that, doesn't it? Somebody sneaks out from the bushes and forcibly kidnaps your mind. So when your mind gets hijacked and your mind is then unavastitam, your mind is not established in being turned within. By the way, for both jnana and bhakti, jnana, pursuit of spiritual wisdom, bhakti, pursuit of cultivating devotion, in both cases, your mind needs to be fixed within. In the case of jnanam, it's kind of more obvious, the need, since jnanam, since spiritual wisdom is a result of atma-vichara, self-inquiry, the need for this kind of withdrawal and turning, focusing your attention within is obvious. But even for bhakti, turning your attention within is crucial, because Sri Krishna says again and again, when he says, you should meditate on me. We saw this in the Bhagavad Gita again and again, or we saw it in this text many times as well. Sri Krishna says, you should meditate on me, not on the altar. You should meditate on me, not in Vrindavan, Vraj. You should meditate on me where? Within. Sri Krishna says this again and again and again. So, in both cases, whether you're pursuing spiritual wisdom or you're pursuing bhakti, you need that capacity to turn your attention within. Therefore, what should you do? You should, in the last line, atma vasham nayet, we talked about that in our meditation session, you should bring your mind, nayet, you should bring your mind, atma vasham, under control. How? Anurodhena margena. Margena, through a path, through a technique which is anurodha, which is suitable, a suitable technique. We could spend hours talking about meditation techniques. This is not the time. But the key word here is you should cultivate the ability to control your mind using a suitable technique. And how much effort should you put in to training your mind in that way? He says, atandritaha. Tirelessly. How much effort do you put in? Think of how much effort you, when you were in school, when you had a big exam, how much effort did you put in? There are times in life when we are prepared to invest tremendous amounts of effort because the tasks require it. Here, the task is atma vasham, is bringing your mind under control. And arguably, it's one of the most important tasks of our entire lives. How much effort does it deserve? That's the point. So, meditation, you've heard me say this, meditation is not optional. We need to cultivate that mind which is capable of being focused, of being concentrated. And Sri Krishna says, atandritaha, you should train your mind tirelessly. Just a final observation here. Why don't they teach meditation practices to children? To me, and by the way, a handful of schools do. Wonderful. There are so many meditation practices that would be suitable for children. And imagine if you were taught meditation practices as a child and you used and developed those meditation practices through your youth, through your teenage years, through young adulthood. You've been practicing your meditation practices your entire life from childhood onwards. Do you think that might make things a little easier nowadays? Yeah. Well, to me, it's a huge blind spot. If only we could teach our children some age-appropriate and culture-appropriate meditation practices. It can be done, and in my opinion, should be done. This is a side comment here. Good place to conclude. We'll end with a prayer. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma satgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Mrityorma amritangamaya. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om. That's it. Please stop the recording. And I broke out.